I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Sam Wainwright, the Socialist Alliance declared candidate for the federal seat of Fremantle. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much indeed.
Sam, this isn't the first time you've run for the Socialist Alliance for the seat of Fremantle, unless I'm mistaken.
No, that's right. I couldn't actually tell you how many times I've run, but it's probably at least half a dozen by now. So I've done it quite a few times. There's you know, when you've got an existing sort of profile, that's an argument for you to be the candidate next time. That's not to say that I want to be the Socialist Alliance candidate every time. But when you're a small party, it's actually hard to find candidates. I mean, it's not just hard because you're a small party, but the Australian Constitution actually knocks a lot of potential candidates out of the ring. So
they've been born somewhere else.
That's right. So it's not just a question of having dual citizenship. If you are entitled to it and haven't actively renounced it, you're knocked out as well. Now, in the past,
you're not about to confess something.
No. I don't qualify for any other citizenships. But we've had people who've been candidates in the past who run for us who can't now because of the extra focus. Now, in the past, it really only became an issue if you won, you know, and then people might challenge your election. But because of the whole scandal around all, you know, the various senators and even Josh Wilson himself and all that kind of thing,
to do your due diligence.
Yeah, the Electoral Commission now asks you to sign a four page sort of declaration where you declare that you know the citizenship of your grandparents, and on it goes. And so you can't get away from it. I mean, you can't lie on that form. That'd be a false declaration. So that has made it harder for us, to be quite frank. And then secondly, you can't be a servant of the crown either. So that knocks out, you know, a public servant of any kind. So it's a funny situation. Well, it's not a funny situation. It's actually a bad situation for Australian democracy, where for a country built on immigration, it's probably sort of half to two-thirds of people are not actually eligible to stand for Parliament, which, you know, it's made it harder for me to pass the baton. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, I mean, the other difficulty, of course, for people who do run for the Socialist Alliance is that in a seat like Fremantle, and looking at the results at the last election, I think you polled under 1,000 primary votes, just over 1% of the total vote. And I haven't looked back before that, but it's a tough gig if you're running for the Socialist Alliance. So the question is, leaving aside personal circumstances, why did the Socialist Alliance run a candidate when that's the likely outcome?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. One, although very modestly, our vote has been sort of increasing since we were formed in 2001, and I think we've run in every single state and federal election. So that's... But I know every candidate says they run to win, and I'll say that too. But you also run to influence the debate. It's a way of engaging in public debate. And election, you know, there's a lot of people who don't really think about politics a whole lot in between elections, and elections is when they do think about politics. And running in the election gives you a platform to actually engage and debate with people and to put your ideas out there. And so necessarily then we don't judge our success purely on basis on the votes that we get. I mean, obviously that's a very important indicator of your success. And if it's increasing or decreasing, then that's something you need to take on board. But we are sort of more broadly trying to turn the dial to the left. And so in that sense, we see our campaign as actually putting pressure on the left flank of both the Greens and the Labor Party. And for us, that's a measure of success as well.
Well, let's turn to influencing the debate and what the issues are. Speaking locally, Fremantle, the electorate, federal electorate, which extends a fair bit south and east of the centre of Fremantle, what are some of the local issues as you've identified them that you are mentioning in this campaign?
Sure. Look, I think the issues affecting people the most in Fremantle are the same as they are across the country, but in different proportions. I think the housing affordability crisis is one in particular. I mean, this is a real structural problem for Australian society. In terms of things that you would describe as strictly Fremantle based, And an issue that I've been involved with for a long time and still very passionate about, and I know a lot of other people in Fremantle are as well, that I want to highlight in the course of this campaign, is the need for a qualitative improvement to public transport in Fremantle as well. Now, that's something that has to be negotiated with the state, but the, you know, most major transport projects are co-funded by state and federal. And although I'm a big fan of Metronet, you'll note that there are no Metronet projects for anywhere south of the river and west of the Kwinana Freeway. So
where's pork barrelling when you want it?
Exactly right. So it's why does one quarter of Greater Perth miss out on the Metronet largesse? And so the sorts of projects that I'd like to see is transit connecting Fremantle to Murdoch and transit connecting Fremantle to Coburn.
Okay, are there other local issues that you want to highlight for Fremantle voters? Or is it principally that issue, which is a very big one?
Yeah, look, in terms of a strictly local issue, I think that's the most significant one. Like I say, I think the housing affordability crisis and the ability for Fremantle people to live in Fremantle remain...
part of a bigger story.
It's part of a bigger story, but in an area like Fremantle where particularly inner Fremantle is gentrifying...
Yes.
There's Fremantle people who can't afford to live in Fremantle anymore, and that's going to need... There's sort of tends to be buck passing on this issue, but we know the policy levers which have created the housing situation that we have are both state and federal, and we need state and federal governments pulling in the same direction on this matter.
Okay. Now, that does take us into the Socialist Alliance as a party. Quite quickly, how broadly spread is the Socialist Alliance around the country, and does it have national policies?
It does have national policies, and it has branches spread across the country. It was formed in 2001, so it's still, you know, I'm very sober about our size and strength and influence. We're quite a small organisation, but we are running candidates across the country. Yes,
and the name. I mean, lots of people who are older, like me, or with their lives dealing with concepts of socialism and Marxism and Lenin Trotskyites and everybody else. In the old days in Fremantle, we used to have Communist Party candidates running. So there's always been a tradition of people on the left running in Fremantle. But in that broader political, ideological scope, where does the Socialist Alliance fit?
I think that's a really good question. You know, if I were to suggest to you that the sort of space in Australian politics or force in Australian politics that we would like to contribute to the re-emergence of, it is something more like the old Communist Party. I mean, this you can make, and we do make, a whole range of criticisms of the old Communist Party, in particular its Stalinism, and for most of its existence, its uncritical relationship with the... With the former Soviet Union. But something a lot of people don't understand to this day is just how much its activity shaped the Australia that we live in today, and what a powerful force the Communist Party was. It really grew as a force in the course of the Great Depression. You know, when you think of an Australia where there was 30% unemployment and no welfare system, and most people didn't own their own home. And of course, there was quite an intense sort of competition for influence in the labour movement and the broader working class between the Communist Party and the Labour Party. And although the Labour Party was always the majority influence in the broader working class and in the union movement, there are a whole range of really important social reforms that were spearheaded by the Communist Party. And I think that's in particular because it was an organisation, while it did run in elections, it only ever got one person elected to an Australian Parliament. That was Fred Patterson in Queensland. But it profoundly shaped Australian politics, and profoundly for the better, we would say. And it was an organisation who, yes, it ran in elections, but it was fundamentally an extra-parliamentary organisation. So it saw its centre of gravity as organising grassroots struggle in workplaces, in communities. And that's... We passionately believe that we need to see a similar force in Australian politics.
So that's a role you see for the Socialist Alliance at a grassroots level. In broader macro policies, I'm taking it from what you've already said that the housing issues in Australia is something that the Socialist Alliance, if they were emperor for more than a day, would like to take action on. And what sort of policy action do you imagine happening which would make things, I'm assuming, in sort of ideological language, fairer for Australian citizens?
Sure, and just to, I mean, obviously the sort of, just to pick up your sort of comment about, you know, if we're emperor for a day, I mean, in a certain sense, if you look at our, if you look at, you know, the policies on our flyer, they sort of assume that, you know, we could be emperor for a day and do all these things, which we don't pretend we will be come, you know, May 21st. But they're things...
In influencing the policy.
That we want to influence, you know, if and where we can, as much as we can. So back on this housing question, like a lot of Australians don't realise just how bad the housing situation is in Australia, and that Australia, in terms of equitable access to housing, we are one of the worst countries in the OECD. So for all our sort of, you know, defining ourselves as the lucky country and what have you. So there's two things. Well, I think, in fact, the starting point needs to be this. It should be an obligation of government to guarantee every Australian access to dignified, affordable housing, however that may be, in the same way that we expect it to be an obligation of government to provide access to public education and public healthcare. Now, there's two things we can do about that. In the first instance, we need rental laws that actually protect the rights of private tenants. Australia is the worst in the OECD on this on that score. In many European countries, landlords can only put rent up by CPI. That's the first thing. And second thing, tenants can't be kicked out. You know, tenants who do the right thing, pay the rent on time, can't be kicked out without cause. So there's a recognition there that yes, if you've got some money to invest in housing, you can do that. You can make a steady, guaranteed return. But not this sort of speculative kind of investment that we have in Australia, or you know, the sort of grotesque situation where, you know, even mum and dad landlords can sort of kick out a good tenant because their little darling's coming back from their gap year, and they just kick someone else out in the street and totally disrupt their lives. So that's just not possible in many European countries. It's actually very hard to kick tenants out. So that's the first thing. We need reform. We need to give much greater security to private tenants. But the second thing we need to do is a significant investment in social housing. Like the social housing stock
Is that a federal and a state?
It's a federal and a state one. I mean, they both pass the buck on it. And to really solve the problem, both federal and state are going to have to come together on this one. Just so you get a grasp of just how miserable the situation is in Australia, social housing is only 4% of our total housing stock, 4%. Whereas in Britain, I think it's about 12%, France at 17%, Denmark it's 20%. So that has created a situation in Australia where most working people, there's a growing body of working people who are not poor enough to qualify for social housing, because in Australia, social housing has become welfare net housing. It used to be just a regular housing option for working class people, but neither can they afford the private market. And we've created a monster.
Some other big issues that seem to be around, and certainly the Fremantle Shipping News has been concerned about, is climate change. Where do you stand on climate change?
Well, I mean, it's the issue above all other else. I mean, it literally poses an existential threat to human civilization as we know it. I mean, if we push past 2 or 3 degrees warming, then outdoor agriculture, human civilization as we know it, will no longer be possible. And so we need targets that are based on the science. And net zero by 2050 is not a scientific target. Net zero by 2050 is a political target. And I say this, if there's one thing that is as bad as climate change deniers, it's climate change fakers. And anyone who claims that net zero by 2050 is serious action is either deluded or lying. Really, we need to be net zero by 2030. And so the starting point in a place like Western Australia, of course, is no new exploitation of fossil fuels and an immediate transition to 100% renewable energy for stationary electricity production, and then a rapid drawdown in emissions from all other sources as well. Sources which are growing, like transport.
We're fast running out of time. It's a terrible thing, isn't it? We're not far away from the election either. Federal Integrity Commission. Where do you stand on that issue.
Yeah, we support one, absolutely, and one needs to be established, and it also needs to be complemented, we would say, with much stronger whistleblower laws to protect whistleblowers.
What about political financing reform? Do you have a position about that?
Yes. So certainly we would support the banning of corporate donations, public funding of election campaigns we support, but that needs to be reformed as well. So we have a situation where established political parties can receive both corporate donations, but they also receive public donations. You asked me at the start of the interview, you know, you guys in social science, you run every time, you only get about 1%, why do you do it? So not only do we not get your deposit back if you don't get 4% of the vote, you don't get public funding. So in a certain sense, you see that the established political parties actually get a war chest, a taxpayer-funded war chest to fund their re-election next time. And it's a perpetual motion machine for them. Well, it's not perpetual motion, it's funded by the Australian taxpayer. So we think there needs to be some pretty radical for levelling the playing field. Yes, so public funding can play a role in that, but you can't have it both ways. You can't have public funding and corporate donations.
Sam, it's been lovely talking to you. Good luck with your campaign. Hopefully the weather stays fine for you, and we'll see you at the big candidates debate in Fremantle on the 10th of May.
I look forward to it.
Thank you very much.